From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm half anchor, half man, Bill Curtis. And here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Great to see you. Good to be back with you guys in Chicago. It was one of those weeks that made you seek out some comfort, you know? But not just any comfort, but the comfort of trustworthy, stalwart, honest authority. In other words, it's a good time to turn to science fiction, which is why we are so excited. We'll be talking to Captain Jean-Luc Picard, Sir Patrick Stewart. Yes! Later on in the show, he'll make us all feel better. But in the meantime, your mission is to seek out your phone and dial 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Let's welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Matthew Rudolph from Orlando, Florida.
Orlando, Florida. How wonderful.
Very nice.
I know. No one ever really says that, but I meant it. What do you do there?
I'm a student researcher, everything from pine scrubs to elephants. Hmm.
So I mean, just you walk out your door and it depends on what you find? Is that how it works?
Oh, yeah, we have a huge arboretum here. It's beautiful.
Yeah, but the elephants is what's sort of weird.
Yeah.
And pine scrub sounds like a cleaning product.
Either it's what you wear when you like do surgery in the woods. You wear pine scrubs.
Yes. Well, that's our show for this week.
Thank you.
All right.
Now, welcome to the show, Matthew. Let me introduce you to our panel. First up, the man behind Esquire's politics blog, Written with Fire. It's Charlie Pierce. Next, she's a writer on the upcoming Yahoo series Other Space from Paul Feig. It's Shelby Farrow. Yeah. And an author, humorist, craftsman, father, and astronaut with an introduction that's 80% true, Tom Baudet.
Hello, Matthew.
Welcome to the show, Matthew. You're going to play Who's Bill this time? Bill Curtis is going to read you three quotations from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you will win our prize. Scorekeeper Emeritus Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. You ready to go?
Sounds great.
All right. Here is your first quote.
I have no idea what's going on.
That was Congresswoman Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia as the House debated the Cromnibus, the bill they hoped would stop what from happening?
Oh, the government shutdown.
That's exactly right. The government shutdown. It would be prevented this time around by the Cromnibus. Now, despite its name, the Cromnibus is not a big bus used to carry around the extended family of Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney. It's a massive $1.1 trillion spending bill, part continuing resolution, that's the CR, and part Optimus Prime, the good transformer.
Didn't we just have a shutdown?
Oh, yeah, we did. Like, a little bit more than a year ago. Yeah.
Does this happen? Is this a thing? Is this a yearly thing?
Given your youth, it actually, for you, might be a yearly thing.
That's true, yeah.
Well, Shelby, when two parties hate each other very much...
sometimes they
get together. They get together and they talk, and then comes the Cromnibus. But the bill was passed, just barely, so the good news is we have a government. The bad news is it's this government.
But now they get to say all aboard the Cromnibus.
Yeah!
So we're all winners.
Matthew, your next quote comes from a man reporting on some visitors to New York this week.
Kate is really stunning, gorgeous, elegant, perfect. William, he's nice too.
That was the manager of a New York radio station talking about meeting what couple of tourists in New York this week?
Oh, the Prince and the Duchess of Cambridge.
Yes, indeed, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. Kate and William, the Duchess of Cambridge and her husband, the Duke of Earl, came to the U.S. this week for a visit. First stop, seeing LeBron James versus the Brooklyn Nets at the Barclay Center in Brooklyn. They didn't have tickets. They were just lost and went toward the first place with a vaguely British name on the sign. Barclay Center. Perhaps we shall meet there Sir Charles Barclay. Now, the basketball game did not happened without controversy. LeBron James, who played the Nets single-handedly, he's a good player. They came off the court to meet the royal couple, right? And he's all sweaty. He hasn't showered yet. And he puts his arm around the Duchess. You are not supposed to do that. She did not seem offended because she is, of course, a princess. From this moment on, LeBron's right armpit will smell like lavender and happiness.
Do they feel weird coming here that we, like, fought to not be part of Britain?
I think they're over that.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they took South Carolina home or something. Yeah. Well, maybe they could have.
No. Okay. Well. I mean, it must be weird for Prince William. I mean, he looks like, you know, face, he looks like Bob from accounting, right?
And then
he's traveling with this beautiful princess who's all the gray. It's like the quote that Bill opened with there. I mean, kind of.
You know, that quote that he opened with. Well, the prince is super ugly and his wife's mad hot. Yeah. That quote.
Yeah, that one.
Heard.
Well, you know what they say about guys like Prince William? He's much taller when he stands on his throne. Really, I've read that. Honestly, according to a lot of studies of female psychology, a lot of women are really turned on by you being the heir to a major European monarchy. That apparently.
I didn't know that.
It helps you punch above your weight in the dating scene, is what you're saying. All right, very good, Matt. Here is your last quote.
The world needs to know that there's a virus deadlier than Taylor Swift.
That was a man named Kevin Say. He was offering one of many reactions on Twitter to the fact that who had beaten Taylor Swift for the Time Magazine Person of the Year title?
Ooh. Going to go with Peter Sagal?
Close.
So, no, sadly, I was overlooked again. I don't know how that happened. It was not me. Do you know who it was?
Weird Al Yankovic?
No.
Interesting he would go from Peter Sagal to Weird Al Yankovic. Yeah. That was your one step.
I know. There. No, the answer is Ebola. They gave it to Ebola. Picking a virus is unusual. Interviewed at its home inside a red blood cell, Ebola said it was proud of its hard work and looked forward to trying some new projects next year.
No, it was the doctors.
Oh, no, you're right. Yes,
it
I'm sorry.
It was the doctors.
It was not. They didn't give it to the virus. They gave it to the people who are fighting the virus. Oh, great job, Time. Make Ebola even matter. As per usual, they listed runners-up. That included Roger Goodell of the NFL and Taylor Swift.
You're kidding.
No, that's true. They were
Roger Goodell?
Yeah, as a runner-up.
Ebola had a better year than Roger Goodell.
I know. Bill, how did Matt do in our quiz?
You know, we called 2 out of 3 a winner in our book.
Well done.
So, Matthew, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Take care.
All right.
We want to remind everybody they can join us most weeks right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in beautiful downtown Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, just go over to WBEZ.org. You can also find a link at our website, which happens to be waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it is, of course, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, Ben Edelman is a Harvard graduate with degrees in law, economics, and statistics, including a PhD. He also teaches negotiation at the Harvard Business School. So this week, he used that immense brain power and expertise to absolutely nail an unscrupulous business that had robbed him of what?
$4.
$4.
On his bill for Chinese food.
Exactly right. Now, if your Chinese food takeout order came in at $4 more than you expected, you'd probably shrug it off. That's why you couldn't get into Harvard. So basically, this guy orders Chinese food from the Szechuan Garden Restaurant of Brookline, Massachusetts. They overcharge him $4. So, of course, he attacks them with countless emails threatening legal action and demanding $12 in damages. And you're saying, well, how did he go from $4 that they overcharged him to
$12? And citing statutes
He cited statutes. He said, I will report you to the government. I know these people. To punish them, he said, you're going to have to pay a fine to the government once I report you. So why don't you just pay me the fine right now?
Yeah. It's basically the approach the average Southern sheriff has to speeding tickets.
I know. It's terrifying.
Give me $100 and you won't have to go to court.
What's amazing about this is that a guy with degrees in law, economics, and statistics from Harvard is behaving exactly the way you'd expect a guy with degrees in law, economics, and statistics from Harvard. Tom, you'll be happy to know that airlines are making sure their service is tip-top. A Korean Air executive forced the plane she was on to go back to the gate with us right now, because she was not satisfied with what?
Korean Airlines. Mm-hmm. Back to, they hadn't taken off.
They hadn't yet. Well, what happened was is they were taxiing out to take off, mm-hmm. to fly across the ocean to Korea. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, this is unacceptable. We must go back to the gate, because she was unhappy with her what?
The coffee was not bitter enough.
You are close.
Ooh,
her coffee
was not hot enough.
No.
Was too hot.
No,
was,
you're in the right. I'll give you a hint. What do you mean, she said, they're unsalted?
Oh, the peanuts.
The nuts. She was unsatisfied with the nuts. Miss Heather, yes.
I got a ding for that. I'm glad. I didn't do anything, but thanks for the
Ms.
ding.
Ms. Heather Cho is the vice president in charge of service for Korean Air, and by completely unconnected coincidence, the daughter of the airline CEO. But she is not one to let standards slip, especially when it comes to her macadamia nuts that were served to her in a bag rather than on a plate. That was her issue. So she demanded that the flight attendant, who had so grossly insulted her by giving her a nut sack, be removed from the flight. And in order to do that, they had to turn the plane around. She did not get her first choice that the flight attendant be made to walk a plank at 30,000 feet. Yeah.
Was this North Korea?
Yeah, you'd think. So nobody likes going to the store shopping for mattresses. You're in there, you're dealing with salesmen, you feel awkward lying on the mattress for 30 seconds to see if you want to keep it. It's terrible. Here's a better way. It's from one of our sponsors, Casper. They're an online retailer for mattresses. Casper mattresses are American-made. They're obsessively engineered for comfort. They use two technologies, latex foam and memory foam, to give you just the right amount of sink and bounce. Technical terms, people. And they have a risk-free trial. You can try out your Casper mattress for 100 days. And you get free delivery and returns if on day 99 you don't like it. It's outrageous comfort at a polite price. So go to casper.com/waitwait to check out their options. And they have a special offer for listeners to this podcast. Use the promo code waitwait to redeem $50 toward a Casper mattress of your choice. Thanks.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Tom Baudette, Shelby Farrow, and Charlie Pierce. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, everyone. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, hi. This is Ellie Stern. I live in Los Gatos, California.
Los Gatos.
Northern California.
No, absolutely. So what do you do in Los Gatos?
Well, being 80 years old, I'm not retired. I'm busier than ever. Getting into trouble constantly.
Wait a minute. No. What kind of trouble?
Oh, well, if there's a street light that's, the red light is a little too long, I will call the town engineer and let him know.
You're that person!
Yeah.
I'm that person.
You're why I got out of local politics.
Ellie, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you have to tell truth from fiction.
Oh, brother.
Bill, what is Ellie's topic?
Come here often, Ellie.
I'm sorry?
Come You know, I'll bet you hear that a lot.
So dating is not what it used to be. Nowadays, you're faced with the dread of your date discovering you don't look like your selfie in OkCupid. But this week, we read about a surprising new way to meet someone the old-fashioned way, face-to-face, in an unexpected place. Guess the true story, and you'll win Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. Are you ready to play, Ellie?
Yes. In fact, I'd love to meet Carl Castle.
Whoa. You and all the ladies. Well, that might be arranged, but first let's see how you do in our game.
Okay.
Let's hear your first story. of real-world romance from Charlie Pierce.
The proprietors of Schneiderman's Meat and Fish, a landmark in downtown Rhinelander, Wisconsin for the past 50 years, recently added a restaurant on a patio that was built behind the store. As part of promoting the expansion of the business, for the last several months, the Schneiderman family has offered a singles night called the Meat, M-E-E-T, Market at the Meat, M-E-A-T, Market. These events occur on the second Tuesday of every month. There are happy hour drink specials, a number of bargain entrees, and dancing under the stars. There is also a contest for the best, which is to say the worst, double entendre involving sausage, packing, and on the general theme of meeting someone at the meat market. We all assumed when we started that we would be the butt of many jokes, explained Walter Schneiderman. There are plans in the works to expand the singles nights into a weekly feature. It's been working fine, he said, so I have no real beef with it. And yes, I know I said that.
A meat market at a meat market in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Your next story of dating IRL, as the kids say, comes from Shelby Farrow.
We do say that. Bar mitzvah guests have finally gained a reason to cheer Mazel Tov. Yes, these prepubescent rites of passage have become a hotbed of adult hookups. As a director in the entertainment industry, Jennifer, last name withheld, is used to attending parties with a steeper adult-to-tween ratio. So even she still laughs from recalling the very unorthodox, or very orthodox, depending on how you look at it, way she scored a boyfriend at an out-of-town bat mitzvah in Atlanta. Now, ladies, you may be thinking, Shalom Havarim, I hardly know him. But it turns out the relaxed, low-pressure atmosphere of your least favorite nephew's mitzvah might just put you at ease enough to let in that special connection. Between the manischewitz flowing and gefilte fish acting as nature's saltiest aphrodisiac, a bar mitzvah hookup is as natural as Adam and Eve and as sinful as the snake in the garden.
Today I am a man. Let me show you. Bar mitzvah is the latest hookup site for, we hope, adult guests. And your last story of finding love in a cold, cruel world comes from Tom Baudet.
If you're single, over 75, Ellie, and looking for love in South Central Illinois, the Langendorf Family Pharmacy has become the Studio 54 of Urbana-Champaign. It all started when octogenarians Florence DePauw and Estelle Jacobson, friends since college, realized the prescription waiting area at the drugstore was filled with idle seniors quietly checking each other out. It's a natural pickup spot, said Flo, who is herself on the prowl, and not just for medicine, if you know what I mean. With Estelle and Flo's urging and help, the store has added music and refreshments to the free flu shots in the pharmacy waiting area. You can tell a lot about a person by the medications they take, said Estelle. Stool softeners? Not so sexy. Cialis? Yowza.
Here are your choices. People are meeting and finding love in one of these three unexpected places. Is it from Charlie Pierce, a meat market in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, which is now a meat market? From Shelby Farrow, bar mitzvahs, where the wine is flowing? And from Tom Baudet, a pharmacy in Central Illinois where the seniors come to pick up their prescriptions and hopefully each other. Which of these is the real story of a hookup scene?
I was raised in Minnesota. Yeah. I'm from Minnesota, and I have very warm feelings toward Wisconsin.
Okay. Apparently some of our audience does too.
Go on. I'm going to pick number one.
You're
going to
pick Charlie's store.
Yeah.
That's correct. All right. So your choice, which you arrived at after a lot of thought, was to pick Charlie's story of the meat market in Wisconsin that is now a meat market. Well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to someone familiar with the real story.
Bar mitzvah is actually the perfect place to strike up an interesting conversation, which hopefully will lead to something more.
That was Rabbi Arnie Singer. He is a dating coach and a founder of the Jewish dating website jzug.com, talking about how bar mitzvahs are now the go-to place to meet people. You sadly did not choose Shelby's true story. That was a real one. You did, however, pick Charlie's very charming story of Midwestern meetups. I think the winners in this thing are actually us, because we got to talk to you. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And now the game where really cool people come on to do something lame just for a change of pace. We call it Not My Job. Sir Patrick Stewart has done so much in his remarkable career. He was a star of the Royal Shakespeare Company in England. He was the captain who revived Star Trek, the star of the X-Men movie franchise. But more than anything, he is the man who made male pattern baldness sexy. Sir Patrick Stewart, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So how are you, Sir Patrick? How are you doing these days?
I'm well. I'm having a little respite from work at the moment, and I'm enjoying it very much.
I had imagined, because one thing that's happened since last we spoke to you is, of course, you were knighted by the Queen in her honors list, and I just imagined that a knight would have duties, so you'd have to go out and fight evil or go on quests or such like that.
Oh yeah, but I do it on the phone.
Oh, I see. It's all remote evil fighting now.
Oh, sure, yes. I do all my work by third party, yes. Usually on the telephone.
One of the things that we've noticed about you is that we actually know a little bit about how you spend your time, because you have become, in the last few years, a sort of star of Twitter and Instagram and videos. For example, one of the things that everybody was talking to us about when we said that you'd be on the show is not, shall we say, your extraordinary career in the theater or even in film, but the photo of you eating pizza for the first time.
Well, yes. We had a rather heavy night, and my wife very sensibly said to me, what you need is grease. So, but she said, what you need to make you feel better is a slice of pizza. And I said, what do you mean a slice of pizza? Why can't we have a pizza? And she said, no, we'll just get a slice. Well, she learned I had never had a slice before. Now, the word got around that I was actually having my first pizza. Well, that is absurd.
Really? And you grew up in Yorkshire, in the north of England.
I did, yes. I grew up in the West Riding of Yorkshire.
And pizza had not yet, I guess, gotten that far north.
No, we didn't have pizza, we didn't have kale, we didn't have quinoa. Actually, we did have kale. We did have kale. We fed it to the cattle.
I see. And I have to ask, you famously, you left school at age 15, not to be an actor, but to be a reporter, right?
Well, I left school, and strings were pulled, and I was given a job on my local weekly newspaper. My tasks were mostly to do births, deaths, and marriages, and occasionally urban district council meetings, and nothing very exciting or adventurous. But in the community I grew up in, it was commonplace when a member of a family had died that they would be laid out at home for 2 or 3 days.
Right.
And so you would always be asked to come and see the body, the corpse. And I do remember one day, I was only 15, remember, when this happened to me 3 times in one morning.
So you were standing there in a parlor looking at a dead body and saying,
not in a parlor, in someone's home.
Well, that's what I mean, in their
not
parlor.
In that kind of a parlor.
Yes.
Yes, that's yes. Such a quaint, old-fashioned term.
Well, I was trying...
So there would be a knock at the door, and I would say, hello. Very sorry to disturb you, but I am a reporter from The Reporter. That's what our paper was called, The Reporter. And if I may, I'd like to just ask you a few questions about your husband, your father, and so forth. And then invariably it would end by someone saying, well, would you like to come and have a look at him or her? She looks really lovely.
Wow. Sorry,
that's cast rather a kind of pall.
No, no, it's fascinating.
It's very funny.
You realize that,
you want to
like the rest of the civilized world, we would listen to you talk about anything. And I wanted to ask you about that because you're known, among many things, your wonderful speaking voice. But I have watched a lot of PBS, and I know that people from the north of England have an accent, do they not?
Yes, I grew up... In fact, not only with an accent, but I spoke a dialect, which means that when I began acting around about the age of 13, 14, not only did I have to learn a new way of pronouncing words, I had to learn new words. Would you like me to give you an example?
Oh, please.
I will do it by reciting a few lines of a poem. Please, don't be anxious. This won't take a long time. My mother's sister, my Auntie Annie, every Christmas would recite a poem. It was in my community, it was a very customary thing to be a performer, to sing, to play the piano, to tell a story, to recite. So nobody thought you were odd or a show-off. And my aunt would recite this poem called Dropped On, and it went like this. I was sitting by Arson last evening, my mother and feather were yoff, because they'd yed that me old aunt Susanna were laid up in bed with a cough. She has some brass, as me old aunt Susanna. That's the reason she's looked after so. If they've nowt, well, they're nowt but a bother. There's a sample we owed Uncle Joe. That's my dialect.
That's amazing. I think you should have commended the Enterprise, speaking that way.
Yes, you know, I did somewhere in the bowels of Paramount Pictures. There, I hope it still exists. There is a recording of me on camera playing Captain Picard, some of the scenes from the pilot episode, with a French accent.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've always wondered about that, because
he's a Frenchman. Why shouldn't he have a French accent? And, I mean, can you imagine it? Space. The finder. I have a great respect for the French, and certainly I adore the French language, but no, it would not have worked. I would have sounded more like Inspector Clouseau.
That, I think it would have been hilarious. Well, obviously, we could talk to you all day, but we can't, because we must move on to play our game with you. Sir Patrick Stewart, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
G.I. Joe, G.I. Joe, fighting man from head to toe.
That was the first jingle ever for G.I. Joe, first introduced by the Hasbro Company 50 years ago this month. So in honor of that anniversary, we're going to ask you three questions about the posable action figure. Answer two correctly, you'll win our prize for our listeners. The posable Carl Castle on their voicemail. Bill, who is Sir Patrick Stewart playing for?
Don Schellenberg of Seattle, Washington.
All right. Are you ready, Sir Patrick?
I am. I'm apprehensive, but I'm ready.
Here we go. Now, G.I. Joe, and I'm sure you've been in the United States long enough to know what these are. These are these 8-inch dolls that look like soldiers, G.I. Joes, yes?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know what they are.
Oh. I'm sorry, I need to shrivel now for a bit.
No, I didn't mean that to be patronizing. I do know what they are, and I even know what G.I. stands for.
Oh, okay, very good. G.I. Joe was developed and brought to market 50 years ago in reaction to an interesting discovery. What was that discovery? A, that watching kids play with war toys made adults more likely to support actual wars. B, that children all over America were snapping off their army men's legs trying to bend them. Or C, that little boys were playing with their sister's Barbie dolls in secret.
I think I would go with C, because I think that's the one that I would like it to be.
Well, your will has made it so. It is, in fact, true. Barbie dolls had come out in the late 50s. And what people found is that boys were playing with their sister's Barbie doll, so Hasbro said, we'll make them a doll the same size and they can play with that. All right, second question. As the Vietnam War went on and became less popular with the American public, G.I. Joe needed to change. So Hasbro, the company that made G.I. Joe, did what? A, gave him a beard, just like those hippie peaceniks. B, introduced a new doll to the line, Conscientious Objector Joe. Or C, introduced a line of Viet Cong dolls called, quote, Joe's noble but misguided enemy.
I think I'm going to go for the beard one. It's kind of weird sounding, but I think I have a memory of seeing a doll like that with a beard.
Well, you are right. You did see a doll like that with a beard, because G.I. Joe, they started making him with a beard. Real soldiers don't have beards. They're not allowed to. G.I. Joe does get in trouble sometimes, like when which of these happened? A, at a TSA checkpoint in 2011, agents confiscated one G.I. Joe doll's tiny plastic rifle, just in case. B, his patented kung fu grip caused protests by Chinese Americans back in the 70s who said that to be authentic, it should be called wushu grip. Or C, a packaging error resulted in G.I. Joe's being shipped in packages for Ken dolls, leading many to believe that Barbie was stepping out.
Oh, I think I will go with A, with the first one.
You are correct again, Sir Patrick. Oh. TSA took the tiny rifle from the G.I. Joe because it was a, quote, replica of an actual weapon. A little, little replica. So, Bill, how did Sir Patrick Stewart do on our show?
Congratulations, Sir Patrick. You got them all right. You're a winner.
Sir Patrick Stewart is the star of the new movie MASH, out in theaters January 14th. Sir Patrick Stewart, what a pleasure to talk to you, sir. What an honor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
A quick shout-out to thank our sponsor, Emma. It's not a person named Emma. That would be nice. Most Emmas I know are nice. It's a company. These guys offer tools for email marketing. With Emma, you can create sophisticated automated email campaigns and deliver targeted messages to your audience. The interface is really intuitive, so your team can create great-looking emails in a drag-and-drop editor and track the results easily using an interactive click map that shows where people are clicking on your email. Emma's great for marketing teams or agencies who want to upgrade from the more DIY services but don't want the complexity and expense of an enterprise system.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Charlie Pierce, Shelby Farrow, and Tom Baudet. Here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. In just a minute, Commander William T. Reimker has the bridge in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Shelby, please listen to Bill.
Next time I watch something called Eaten Alive, somebody better get eaten alive.
That was one of many viewers upset that a man did not get eaten alive on a show on the Discovery Channel this week that was called what?
I think it was called Eaten Alive.
Yes, it was. The Discovery Channel said they would broadcast on TV a man being eaten alive by a giant anaconda. Fantastic. This is the perfect show for America. It combines our love of eating with our love of bad things happening to other people. But the guy bailed out before the snake had barely tasted him.
Wait, did they air it?
They aired it. They taped it a while ago and they promoted it. You will see a man.
But at what point did they realize they couldn't just pull back and just cancel it?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, how? Right? But was one guy in advertising just like, I made a lot of posters?
Well, here's the thing.
Proud of them.
No, they tried this, right? They set it up. They said, we're going to broadcast in December of 2014. An amazing thing. And they knew what had happened because they taped it a few months ago. But they didn't tell anybody, and they broadcast it, and they got amazing ratings. It was huge.
Did I mention I'm going to set myself on fire on January 1st?
Tom, a British MP had to apologize this week after he was caught on camera during an important meeting doing what?
Texting?
His colleagues knew something was up when he pumped his fist and shouted, take that, blue lollipops.
Oh, gaming.
He was playing specifically, do you know the game?
Blue lollipops, what is that? That candy cape, candy game, candy?
Yeah, it's Candy Crush.
Candy Crush,
yes. He was playing Candy Crush on his iPad.
Yes.
According to the BBC, lawmaker Nigel Mills played Candy Crush for 2.5 hours during an important hearing on pensions. His fellow MP, Sir Edward Lee, told the BBC, and this is what he said. He said, quote, I survived 9 years as chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, and my God, it was boring. So if Nigel has to keep himself awake by playing computer games, good for him, unquote. That is a friend, ladies and gentlemen. When asked about his Candy Crush addiction, Nigel Mills admitted, I probably had a game or two, but I was fully engaged in asking questions that I thought were particularly important. Among the questions he raised, can you defeat the bubblegum troll with 3 lollipop hammers? Shelby, researchers in Canada have determined that rats, like humans, are more likely to mate with partners who do what?
Ooh. Bring them things?
Shelby. What? What things do you think?
Like food. Like food and
go on.
Bedding and like
bedding.
Bedding?
They're rats, yeah.
Yeah. You realize, you know, this is on the radio, so like people are gonna be showing up with granola bars and futons at your house.
I'd be so okay with that.
No. Rats seem to be attracted to other rats if the other rat is Well, I'll give you a hint. They get them from Victoria's Secret of Nim.
If they have, oh, I can't, if they're wearing bras, what is this? What are you trying to do to me?
Well, a general term for what they sell at those stores is?
Lingerie.
Yes, if the rats are wearing lingerie.
You're kidding.
I am not. It's sort of rat version of lingerie. What they did was scientists put some.
So sexy rats. Rats sexy. Like other sexy rats.
Rats like.
Very tiny thongs.
Scientists put some female rats in little vests, you see. And they found. Sexy vests.
Were they just like doing this over lunch one day?
Yeah.
And they found that the male rats, given a choice, chose to mate with the female rats that were wearing little sexy vests.
Why?
Apparently, they had trained the rats, so they started to associate the vests with sex. This is different from humans, who typically associate vests with not having sex.
That is messed up operant conditioning to make someone be turned on every time they see a tiny vest. Like, that is so weird.
Really?
Why is science doing that?
Science has apparently a lot of spare time.
What is wrong with science?
Science has some spare time. It's a misplaced priority.
They're like,
I guess.
Ebola, we figured that out. Let's do the rats now.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And you can check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian present Laser Hair Removal Live. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter Seigel. This is Lisa Rosinski.
Hi, Lisa Rosinski. How are you?
I'm great.
Where are you calling from?
From Honesdale, Pennsylvania.
Where's Honesdale?
It is in the Poconos, about an hour north of Scranton.
Okay. That's exciting. And what do you do there?
I work at Highlights for Children.
You work at Highlights for Children?
Oh, awesome.
The magazine?
Awesome.
I still read Highlights because I find the puzzles very easy. Well, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Lisa. Bill Curtis is going to perform for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
We Vikings set sail and risk lives. We're packing our clubs and our knives. When we take over villages, the whole family pillages. Because we also are bringing our...
Yes, wives!
Yay!
The standard view of Vikings, of your average Viking, is the idea of a giant bearded man pillaging villages. But new research indicates many Viking raiders brought along their wives and even their children. Less a Viking raid, more a Viking cruise. You know, many Vikings never even reached their destination due to Viking dads making good in the threat to turn this longboat around. Here is your next limerick.
Old school transport and face that's unsheared. By this hipster, St. Nick is revered. In honor of him, there's a new way to trim with some ornaments clipped to my...
beard.
Yes, beard. More and more men are growing big, bushy lumberjack beards, which naturally means a new place to decorate for Christmas. Christmas ornaments for your beard have become so popular this holiday season that beardbaubles.com is completely sold out of beard baubles. Not to worry. You can make your own beard ornaments simply by eating a bowl of Lucky Charms in a hurry. Here is your last limerick.
Our falcons are very well trained, and from coach class we'll gladly abstain. So take your small pups and lock them all up, because our birds can now fly on a...
airplane?
Yes, well, but yes, plane. Very good. In what is great news for both falconers, people who participate in the royal sport of falconry, and really lazy falcons, Falconers and the Falcons will be welcome on Lufthansa planes. This is to accommodate travelers from the Middle East, where falconry is quite popular.
But what kind of gods do we think we are to first build contraptions that can fly and then take nature's contraption that can fly and stick it in ours?
Well, I would think, I mean, I'm not a falcon, as you can tell, but sure. I feel that a falcon would really enjoy it. Probably, like, get up next to the window, right, and watch the world going by, start flapping its wings and going, "Wee! I'm the fastest falcon ever!"
It's like me on those moving walkways.
Exactly.
At the airport.
So how did Lisa do in our quiz?
Would we expect any less from an editor at High Life?
Never.
She got them all right.
Congratulations. Well done, Lisa.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for playing our game. Bye-bye. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
Tom has 2, Shelby 3, and Charlie has 4.
So that means that, Tom, you are up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Senator John McCain broke with his party this week when he defended the release of the Senate's blank report.
The torture report.
Following Prime Minister Netanyahu's call for early elections, lawmakers in blank voted to dissolve their parliament.
Israel.
Right. After a giant storm resulted in power outages throughout the city, San Francisco was briefly forced to shut down their famous blank system.
Trolley car system.
Right, the cable car. On Tuesday, economist Jonathan Gruber apologized for saying that the Democrats relied on, quote, the stupidity of the American voter to pass blank.
Obamacare.
Right,
or
a Wisconsin man who failed a breathalyzer test told the police that while he had not been drinking, he had just blanked.
He had just injected heroin.
No, he had just eaten some beer battered fish. On Wisconsin, with representation in 7 categories, Birdman led the nominations for the 72nd Annual Blank Awards.
Golden Globes.
Right. This week, NASA's Curiosity rover uncovered evidence that showed blank may have once been home to a giant lake.
Mars.
Right. A Canadian man said that he is, quote, ashamed of the person he is when he is drinking after he blanked in the middle of a night.
Called his ex-wife and apologized.
No. After he entered the wrong apartment while wearing a full-body zebra costume and attempted to bite the person he found there. Marshall Mann had just left a costume party.
Why couldn't I have just guessed that?
I don't know. It's always a good idea on this show to go for the drunk zebra. Marshall Mann had just left a costume party where he had been dressed as the world's drunkest zebra. When he stumbled into what he thought was a friend's place and woke up the guy who lived there, became obstreperous, started kicking, biting. The bad news, the guy's roommate was a hungry lion. Bill, how did Tom do in our quiz?
He did very well. 6 right, 12 more points, 14 and the lead.
Well done. All right. Shelby, you are up next. Please fill in the blank. District attorneys in California announced plans on Tuesday to sue popular ride-sharing service blank for misleading customers.
Uber.
Right. A woman in Chile was arrested after the police discovered that her fully decorated Christmas tree was blank.
A dead person?
No, actually a giant marijuana plant.
Oh, okay.
This week, Malala traveled to Oslo to accept her blank.
Oh, her and the other girl just got the Nobel Prizes.
Nobel Peace Prize, right. Yes. Ken Weatherwax, most famous for playing Pugsley on the TV show Blank, passed away at age 59.
Sure, I would know that. Can you say it again?
You're probably not going to know. The Adams family. When asked by a police officer how much she'd had to drink, an Ohio driver responded, blank.
Too much.
No, she said, gobble, gobble, turkey. So Jessica Sorensen was driving down the street in Ohio. She didn't notice that her front tire had come off the rim, and the police pulled her over, and she said, how much have you had to drink? She said, gobble, gobble, turkey. And they said, okay, no problem, then go on your way. No, they arrested her. Bill, how did Shelby do on our quiz?
Shelby got 2 right.
Yeah.
But can I say, for the record,
yeah,
I did know all of Tom's.
I bet you did.
I knew the fish.
All right, then.
4 more points and 7 points total, but Tom still has the lead.
How is that
what,
possible?
What, really?
Yeah. And how many does Charlie need to win?
He needs 5 to tie, 6 to win.
Here we go, Charlie. This week, the United States officially ended its combat mission in blank after 13 years.
Afghanistan.
Right. Despite the fact that he was already consulting with debate experts in preparation for 2016, Texas Governor Blank said running for the presidency is not an IQ test.
Rick Perry.
Yes. Veterans gathered in Hawaii on Sunday to commemorate the 73rd anniversary of the attack on blank.
Pearl Harbor.
Right. On Tuesday, the Energy Department lowered the projected average price of a gallon of blank by 35 cents.
Gasoline.
Right. According to the BBC, it takes longer to watch The Hobbit movies than to blank.
Read the books.
Right, read the book is only one. In a column for the Spectator magazine, former Rear of the Year winner and royal sister-in-law Pipple Middleton said her famous rear does not compare to blank.
Her sister's.
No, to Kim Kardashian's. Bystanders were amazed when a Brooklyn TGI Fridays unveiled its adorable mistletoe holiday drone, and it immediately blanked.
Crashed.
Into a woman's face.
Yes.
So the newest holiday tradition at the Brooklyn TGI Fridays is the mistletoe drone. That's one of those 4-propeller drones with a sprig of mistletoe hanging from it. When it flies over your head, either you kiss your partner or it crashes its blades into your face and takes a chunk out of your nose. That's what happened, but only because, according to the drone operator, the woman in question, quote, flinched. TGI Fridays has blamed the mistake on faulty intelligence that said the woman was an enemy combatant from the Applebee's across the street. Bill, did Charlie do well enough to win?
He did well. 6 right, 12 more points, and with 16, he's the champ.
Yes, well done, Charlie. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists to tell us what souvenir William and Kate brought back for the Queen from their big trip across the pond. But first, let me tell you all that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Pajamagram Company, offering matching holiday pajamas for the entire family, even the cats and dogs. Over 17 family sets online in knits, fleece, and flannel at pajamagram.com. The Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, working to improve the quality of people's lives by supporting the performing arts, the environment, medical research, and child well-being. Information is available at ddcf.org. And Progressive Insurance, with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler James Green. Our web guru is Beth Novi. And today, we must say goodbye to our intern, Kelsey Hardison, who's been a big help to us these last few months and is moving on to bigger and better things. We have no idea what they might be, but anything in the world would be bigger and better than this. Special thanks to John Zajac and Les Dolarchik at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Miles Dernboss. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our CFO is Andy N. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike. He made his sweater himself, Danforth. Now, panel, what souvenir did the royal couple bring home? Charlie Pierce.
His and hers genuine Rolex watches that they found at a great price on a card table along 7th Avenue.
Shelby Farrow.
Reassurances that America has just, like, gotten so fat since they left us and, like, is not doing well at all.
And Tom Baudet.
What the Queen had sent them here for in the first place, which was LeBron James' sweat-soaked game jersey.
Well, if they brought home any of those, panel, we'll ask you about it. All right, Wade, don't tell me.
Thank you to Bill Curtis. Thanks also to Charlie Pierce, Shelby Farrow, and Tom Baudet. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. NPR.